That's what General Forrest pointed out to him. Old Forrest didn't take too well to being chewed out that way. From what I heard, he had some words of his own with Hood. Said that if Hood were a whole man instead of a cripple, he'd whoop him good. Hood's disabilities included a useless left arm, a reminder of Gettysburg, and an amputated right leg, incurred at Chickamauga. As a result of these wounds, the general had to be tied into his saddle whenever the army moved. The general's constant agony fueled a rumor that Hood used so much laudanum to dull his pain that his mind was muddled more often than not. That was just the sort of commander a fighting force needed, Henry thought, bitterly.
We should have had them bastards, Merle said in conclusion. I tell you, boys, I sure do hate to think old Wade died for nothing.
We'll get him today, Carruthers said. But if we don't, hell, we'll just chase him all the way to Nashville.
He laughed, but it had a hollow sound. The army was on the move early. Now that the Yankees had gone on, there was nothing to stop the Confederates from using the turnpike. Again, the advance was split into three columns, one flanking the road on each side, the third staying on the turnpike itself. Forrest and the cavalry ranged out ahead of this central column as the infantry marched north toward the town of Franklin, which lay in a bend of the Big Harpeth River. By mid-morning, the cavalry caught up with Schofield's rear guard. Henry heard the fighting and within minutes joined the fighting himself, riding ahead with Merle and Carruthers to harass the Yankee stragglers with pistol fire. He wished he could get his hands on some more ammunition for the Spencer. During the short time he had used the repeater, he had grown quite fond of the weapon. Henry and his friends were close to the front as they came within sight of a small hill rising in the distance. Between them and the hill lay at least 2 miles of open fields. Henry had a sinking feeling as he saw the terrain. His misgivings were shared by Merle.
Damn it, Merle observed. If the Yanks are on top of that hill, they can make things mighty hot for us if we try to take it.
I know that place, Carruthers said. Franklin's not far on the other side of it. There's a bunch of old breastworks along there, too. I'll bet the Yankees got to working on them as soon as they got there this morning. By now they've had a chance to build them up some.
Henry had never charged an enemy entrenched behind breastworks, but he could tell from the way Merle and Carruthers were talking that it wasn't a good thing. Maybe what we should do is go around them, he suggested. Merle grinned.
Now you're thinking like General Forrest. I bet that's just what he has us do. We can cross that river somewheres else and hit the Yankees from behind. Hell, if we can get around them, there ain't no reason why we can't go right on to Nashville. It ain't but a little ways up the road.
The idea appealed to Henry. Forrest's force wasn't big enough to capture the city by itself, but the cavalry could wreak havoc and soften the place up for when Hood's infantry got there, not to mention playing hell with the Yankee supply and communication lines. It seemed like a good idea to Henry, but obviously someone else didn't think so. The cavalry halted again as the infantry came up. Not the artillery, though. The big guns were still far to the rear, unable to keep up with the rest of the army on the muddy roads. Scouts went out, probing at the hill blocking the path of the Confederate advance. Henry expected the Yankees to be dug in up there, but reports filtered back that the enemy had retreated even farther, to the breastworks on the outskirts of Franklin itself. The Confederates moved up, cresting the hill, and Henry saw to his dismay that the terrain on the far side was even worse for a frontal assault. Another 2 miles of wide-open, almost treeless plain, the ground rolling gently with no place to hide, no cover to shield them from what was sure to be a rain of fire from the Federal guns. The cavalry was divided then, some of it going to each flank. Henry and his friends were on the right. He could see the blue water of the Big Harpeth River in the distance. After so many days and weeks of rain and snow and chill and gloom, this afternoon was almost pleasant with its warming sunshine. The wind was still cold, though. An officer rode by and ordered the men to dismount.
"We won't be fighting from horseback today, boys," he said.
Merle grimaced as he swung down from the saddle. Henry understood. Although he was still far from an expert rider, Henry would have felt better about going into battle mounted. A good horse could carry a man out of trouble in little more than the blink of an eye. A foot soldier, though, could do nothing but slog forward, even though he might be marching straight into the mouth of Hades itself. Henry left the Spencer on the saddle and checked his pistol. The cylinder was fully loaded, but he didn't have much spare ammunition. He could reload once, maybe twice, and that was it. He glanced up at the sun with its weak, late autumn glow. There was only about an hour of daylight left. Maybe General Hood would decide to wait until the next morning to attack. In that time, he could change his mind, decide to let Forrest try flanking the Yankees instead.
"Move out! Straight ahead, boys!"
The shouted order made Henry draw a deep breath. There would be no delay. The attack was beginning now. Henry moved forward, the pistol at his side. Somewhere behind him, a band began to play Dixie. He looked to his left. From where he was, at the far right end of the line, he could see the whole sweep of the Confederate advance. Rank after rank of men in tattered gray and butternut, many of them without headgear, some without shoes. But they stepped out briskly in the dimming light. Brightly colored battle flags, now somewhat faded, snapped in the breeze above them. It was a spectacle the likes of which Henry had never imagined. He had experienced combat, but never before had he witnessed an entire army going into battle at the same time. His heart swelled with pride. Surely on this day the Confederate army would prove to be invincible. How could these soldiers not be, looking like they did? Yankee artillery began to boom. Shells smashed into the line. Canister rounds burst and spewed their deadly fruit. Still the soldiers pressed on. Their pace increased until their determined walk became a run, and then, as had happened so many times in the past, fierce shouts welled from thousands of throats. On across the long open field they surged. Henry yelled too, without even thinking about it. Most of the Union artillery fire was concentrated on the turnpike, where the attack was centered. Out here on the flanks, only a few shells burst. Henry held his fire, knowing he was a long way from pistol range. Time stretched out, slowed down. Eerily, the charge across the fields seemed to take hours. Smoke rose into the sky from the artillery and from the rifles and carbines of the Federal troops crouched behind the hurriedly fortified breastworks. More and more of the running men stumbled and fell as lead ripped through them. But the others kept going, bounding over the bodies of their fallen comrades, and now they were close enough to start firing too.